Expatria has been described as a lament for your country. How do you depict Venezuela in this music?
Well, Venezuela has undergone a very sad transformation the last 16 years. I'd like to share with you a little bit of information so that your listeners who might not be aware of what is going on in Venezuela will know. When I wrote Expatria in 2011, I dedicated it to the 19,336 victims of homicide that year. Venezuela has a population of 29 million people. Last year, there were 25,000 murders in Venezuela. That, if you transpose that to the equivalent number in the USA, that would mean 32 times more homicides in this country than there are presently. It's a total chaos. It's a complete demise of justice, of law, and of society as a whole. Unfortunately, what brought me to write such a piece, which is beautiful, but incredibly powerful, sad, frustrating, and where I really wanted to portray the violence and the corruption that has eaten away at my country, was the fact that what brought me to write it was the fact that I didn't want to remain silent. I didn't want to remain inactive as an artist, and I wanted to use my voice to tell the world what is happening in Venezuela. So as a Venezuelan, I just said, I have to use my craft to really make people feel, make people empathize with what's happened the last 16 years in my country. And music is the best vehicle to do that, because when people listen to a piece, it makes them think, it makes them feel. They can't walk away, they can't look away. It becomes a part of who they are, of their fiber, of what they're made of, let's say, and in their bodies. And it's something, I wanted it to be a picture that remained with them. Mm.
About 4 minutes into the piece, mm-hmm. and then I think again around 7 minutes,
yes,
I noticed a sound that seemed to convey beating. Was that literal? Were you thinking of cops beating or criminals beating with sticks?
That's a very smart comment, because I wanted this to be an experiential piece, not something that you just listen to, but something that also crushes you, something that affects you. And I think that part you're talking about is probably the martellato part, where I wrote the piano part to depict gunfire, so it's very much an automatic weapon, and I wanted the public to really understand that in a country that is so violent, gunfire is an everyday occurrence everywhere, anytime. It doesn't matter where you live, and this section of Expatria is exactly that. It's gunfire and oppression, and at the same time, the military presence and the military sounds, you know, that you have with the brass, with some of the strings, is very much a part of that whole portrait.
There are also some portions that seem to evoke Latin dance rhythms, not necessarily mm-hmm. happy, mm-hmm. but. It seemed to me a reminder mm-hmm. of a strong culture in yes. the midst of all of this sadness and violence.
Yes, of course. I mean, that's impossible to separate this rhythmical core of the Latin American people and music. It's all in there. I mean, this is also meant to sound as a struggle to somehow live within the context of who you are as a people, but at the same time with this crushing oppression that is very much the government's fault. So it's a piece of protest. It's an act of creative dissent. It's what I could do best as an artist, to talk about a situation that is a flagrant human rights violation on every level. And as an Amnesty International consul, which I'm very honored to be now, also use my role as an ambassador to really shed light on a whole country that is suffering terribly, that is under a government that unfortunately has been responsible for the destruction of society, of our economy, of everything.
That role you have as honorary counsel for Amnesty International indeed is so important in bringing this awareness to so many people. There is a proud tradition of musicians as goodwill ambassadors.
Yes.
Politics and art, the intersection can be so complicated. I mean, Valery Gergiev, it's very difficult for me to think about him, to see his name, to hear his recordings without thinking of his relationship with Putin.
Yes.
I have the impression you feel it is your duty, your obligation as an artist to address these human rights violations and the grave situation in Venezuela. And yet, there's another layer that makes it even more complicated because of the success of El Sistema in Venezuela. What I know that there has been a good bit of press about you and Gustavo Dudamel disagreeing about El Sistema. It seems that the initiative, the country did so much to help young people become aware of great music, to connect with music. But are you at a point where you feel it's time for that program to end?
No, I think that the idea of the Sistema, its initial, let's say, ethos, was a very beautiful one. And it's important to remember that this Sistema, it was created 40 years ago. It did not start with Chavez or with Maduro. I think bringing classical music and education and possibilities and dreams to children is fundamental. It's vital. It's something that every child should have access to. The problem for me is when the state that sponsors that same musical program, which then travels the world sharing an image of a Venezuela that does not exist, a false image of my country that is in so much turmoil and pain, then there is a problem in the image and the message that you're portraying through that music and the people who are sponsoring you, which are the ones responsible for the demise of Venezuela. In this case, music is not separated from politics. The Sistema and the government are in one big pot together. You know, simply providing access to music is not—it's not going to create social change in despotic societies like my country, and it's been proven by the fact that Venezuela has experienced its maximum deterioration during a period of unprecedented support for music. If the Sistema says they have 700,000 kids studying music and performing, what does that say? With that vast number, which is debatable, but what does that say about society, about how music can change society. These are the most turbulent and violent years of my country.
But do you think they're necessarily related? I mean, couldn't one argue that for those 700,000, perhaps instilling an appreciation for music is instilling an appreciation for humanity, and this will make them citizens that could bring about change?
Well, I think what Venezuela needs now is not a musical program, really, because of the urgency of the situation, the critical situation. It needs for people to advocate for a change in government and also for a democracy. That's all that we're saying, a democracy. We all deserve to live in a democracy. You know, the what I mentioned about the numbers with the Sistema and also the fact that it doesn't prove that it creates social change is that there's been such an exponential growth in violence and in homicide, a 900% increase since 1999, since Chavez. And at the same time, you've had a rise in also in the music system and in the kids benefiting from it and the success of it. And that has not, the music has not created the social change that anybody expected or that we would like. The fact is that the country is absolutely in a lawlessness situation. It's a country that does not function, and even those kids that are in the Sistema are affected by it. They too are going hungry. They too go on the streets and are murdered, as happened just a couple of months ago. Two kids were murdered in isolated incidents. Many of them are also kidnapped. I mean, they are not immune. They're not protected to what is happening in the country as a whole. So for me, the important thing is the country as a whole. And although I would always love for these kids to have access to music, for me, it has to be more than just about the music. The music has to carry a message, and it has to carry a message about the whole country and about protecting the whole country and advocating for the lives of every single person in the country, not just the people in the Sistema. And what I would like to see, of course, is for the Sistema to really tell the story of what Venezuela is really like now. It's not the panacea that the propaganda, you know, that they share around the world. It's not the panacea that they say it is. It is a country in total devastation.
Understood.
Yeah.
But isn't the political and social mess that is the country, don't you think it would exist even without Sistema? If these students stopped studying music, wouldn't the same miserable conditions be there?
Well, yes, and of course, a lot has to be said as far as that it's a wonderful thing for a kid to have an instrument in hand, but they are this, you know, the fact that they study music and that they're able to make a life in music does not, like I said, protect them from once they leave the concert hall, once they leave their practice room, they are exposed to what every other Venezuelan is exposed to, which is rampant crime, which is a very high possibility that they will be killed once they leave that building, that oasis. And, you know, I feel that this is a time where music is almost irrelevant. This is a country in a humanitarian crisis. And my real frustration has to do with the fact that the Sistema now belongs to the government. It is an arm of the government that is funded by the government. Therefore, their responsibility is to also promote the government internationally under tours. This is what they have to do to get paid, basically. They have to be a propaganda tool for the government. Now, is it worth that? I mean, is it worth for a child to have an instrument in hand and at the same time, let's say, instead of helping to create change in the way that the world sees Venezuela and actually reporting on what is happening to Venezuela and what they are suffering and their families are suffering, wouldn't it be more important to finally tell the truth and tell the world what is really Venezuela? Venezuela is not a few wonderful orchestras with kids and, you know, jumping on the stage and playing wonderful music and being all exuberant and happy. Venezuela is a country that is completely obliterated. Mm. That is the reality, not the kids in the front of a Deutsche Grammophon recording wearing the Venezuelan flag as uniforms, saying fiesta and looking happy and joyous. That's not Venezuela. Venezuela is people standing in line for 6-7 hours to buy a jug of milk, if they can find it. Venezuela is people who have cancer, who have no access to medicine. I mean, a friend, one of my closest friends, just died a few months ago because she had cancer and she did not have access to the treatment that she needed. Uh-huh. So this is Venezuela. This is the real country, not the image that the sistema portrays, unfortunately.
Gabriela, what pushed you over the edge? What was mm-hmm. there one event before the mm-hmm. your friend passed away? Obviously, if yeah. you've been talking about this for quite a while.
Yeah. Well, really, Lois, it was seeing the incredible amount of suffering, receiving thousands of messages on my Facebook, on my Twitter, personal messages, people coming to me at concert halls all over the world, crying, literally crying on my shoulder, telling me how their mother had been killed or how their son had been kidnapped or how they had to leave Venezuela and start over with nothing. I can tell you thousands of stories of exiled people who have suffered tremendously. It's like a war zone. And what pushed me over the edge was not only all these people who came to me to share their very real stories and the sense that I had to be a voice for them. And then, on the other hand, seeing how so many remain silent in a time of real crisis. And I think these people motivate me, they inspire me with their stories to actually tell the story to the world. And I'm just trying to motivate everybody who has the ability to speak to the media and who has a public platform to use it to really have a message and to really denounce things that should not be happening, to protest human rights violations at a time that we really need that silence to be broken.
Well, your work there is to be applauded.
Thank you.
The Rachmaninoff Second Piano Concerto. Yes. You give just a rapturous performance on this recording. I wondered, was the pairing, was it intentional that this composer mm-hmm. was one who had to live in exile?
Yes, it was very much, even though he wrote this concerto before he had to live through that, but his love for Russia, how present it is in everything he wrote, everything he did, is so, I identify with that very, very much. The fact that this is the child, let's say, born out of a period of depression and an inactivity as a composer, out of such a struggle, the fact that such a beautiful piece came out of those years is also very relevant to the recording. And I just love Rachmaninoff, and I really wanted to bring this to the public and also begin the conversation about performer, composer, improviser, and about creative dissent, and about how we use our music as artists to use metaphor to tell stories and to impact people emotionally and to make them think about things that matter to us and that should be on the table, that we should think about.
I think you do that all profoundly.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I thank you. This has been a privilege.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for your questions. They're not easy to answer because they are difficult situations, but I think it's so important to open that conversation, and I appreciate that. Thank you.